Call the second case on our 9 o'clock docket, Carl Gavril versus Mark Lieberman and George Onzo.
And please report, Mr. Jeff Coe for Argus for Talent, Mr. Gary Worley for Argus for Appalachia.
May it please the court, I'm Jeff Coe, here on behalf of the appellant Carl Gavril. I am a late-minute substitution for Pat Gallagher, who tried the case. I was not involved in the trial, nor in the preparation of the appellant's brief, but I don't want to waste the court's time, but I do have, I think, a few comments and may be able to answer some questions if the court has some. One thing that I can clear up, there were multiple defendants sued, and I want to make sure the court is aware of who's left and what the issues are at this point in time. There were some parties non-suited during the trial. There have been some other parties that were part of the trial court's final judgment that have either had their claims not appealed or in one case settled. And so remaining before the court, as I understand it, are George Onzo. That's the defendant that the jury found negligent and awarded the damages against. There was a JNOV taken as to him. He remains before the court. Mr. Worley represents him. And the other is Mr. Mark Lieberman, who received a summary judgment prior to the trial dismissing plaintiff's claims against him. And there was a take-nothing judgment entered on that summary judgment order. The Condominium Association is no longer a party there. As I understand it, there's been a settlement. The other parties, for example, Mrs. Lieberman, the appellant did not appeal the summary judgment as to her. So there are two issues before this court. One, did the trial court correctly grant summary judgment for Mark Lieberman prior to the trial? I'll address that first. And the second is, did the trial court correctly grant judgment notwithstanding the verdict as to the jury's findings of negligence and damages against George Onzo? With respect to the summary judgment, the plaintiff filed a response and attached deposition excerpts from two different deponents. He had pled that Mark Lieberman was negligent in connection with, I don't know how to describe it, an altercation, a dispute, a shoving match, a grabbing match, with respect to a homeowners association meeting. And there was a heated exchange for about 30 minutes. The court's probably seen the videotape, which was introduced into evidence at plaintiff's exhibit number one. If not, I would certainly commend that to the court's consideration, because I think that it shows that the conflicting evidence that was developed at the trial with respect to who said what, who did what, who pushed who, whether they were trying to hurt somebody or whether they were trying to grapple for possession of a file folder is what led to the events. But at any rate, the videotape was not in evidence in connection with the summary judgment response. So the plaintiff, Carl Gavril, filed deposition excerpts in connection with the response that so the sworn testimony was that Mr. Lieberman had pushed plaintiff in an effort to retrieve this file. And there was some testimony by Ms. Lauren Young with respect to the Condominium Association, the nature of these meetings, the fact that they frequently became volatile, her expressed desire for security and things of that nature to show that this type of conduct was foreseeable, more against the Homeowners Association than against Mr. Lieberman. And there was testimony that Mr. Gavril was injured as a result of this conduct. So it's our contention on appeal that that raises genuine issues of material fact that would have precluded the grant of the summary judgment that Mr. Lieberman should have stood trial along with Mr. Onzo. But the summary judgment response is short, and that's a judgment call for this court. I think we're all familiar with no evidence summary judgment standards. The question is, does the evidence presented by the plaintiff meet the plaintiff's burden to bring some evidence on each of the points? And we believe that it does. With respect to the judgment NOV, there was a great deal of discussion at the trial court, and the court's read in the appellant's brief some argument with respect to intentional conduct versus negligent conduct. And I think it's clear from the trial testimony and from the tape that there may have been a combination of both. There may have been some negligence in persisting with the meeting in light of the hostility, and there may have been some legitimate negligence in attempting to grab the file or accidentally pushing, shoving, knocking down to the ground, things like that. There may have been some intentional pounding, beating, kicking, things like that. At the trial, though, there was no evidence that any responsible third party caused Mr. Gavril's injuries. And when I say that, I'm trying to say that carefully. There was never a pleading by Mr. Onzo that these other gentlemen at the meeting or the ladies at the meeting caused any of Mr. Gavril's injuries, and nor did he plead that anyone else was the sole proximate cause of Mr. Gavril's injuries. And the case was submitted to the jury, and the jury was asked, was Mr. Onzo negligent, and if so, was that negligence a proximate cause of Mr. Gavril's injuries? The jury was free to determine that there are other proximate causes of those injuries, but did determine that Mr. Onzo's conduct was one of the proximate causes of his injuries. And so we feel that the evidence with respect to Mr. Onzo's actions and what you see on the tape with respect to Mr. Onzo is some evidence that supports that jury verdict, especially when considered in the light most favorable to the verdict. With respect to the damages, there were medical...
What is it on the tape that you think supports the verdict?
I think a couple of things. I think Mr. Onzo was the presiding officer, the president of a homeowners association who on the tape indicates that he called the meeting, and he let the meeting persist to the point where it erupted into violence. And then he participated to some degree in the violence by coming into contact with Mr. Gavril. At least that's the testimony at the trial. Whether he intended at that point to harm him or whether he was attempting to break up the fight, there's conflicting information on that. So, but from a trial court standpoint, the evidence that supports the judgment or the verdict of the jury has to be considered in the light most favorable to the verdict. And so if those contradictions in the evidence are set aside, and the question is there some evidence from which a reasonable trier of fact, the jury in this case, could have reached this determination, then it must be upheld. We believe the trial court erred by holding in the JNOV that there was essentially no evidence, no legally sufficient evidence to support the jury's verdict. We just think that that's incorrect, and we think the trial court...
What about the argument that as a matter of law there was no legal duty on the part of Mr. Onzo or whoever?
I think there's a legal duty not to injure somebody by coming into contact with them, and I think that Mr. Onzo did come into contact with Mr. Gavril. And so...
So the calling of the meeting... The presiding over the meeting would not be any evidence, as you alluded to earlier. It would just simply the contact that he made.
Well, I think that I didn't mean to waive that by arguing the coming into physical contact.
Not using that in support of your argument for legal duty.
I believe that the presiding officer in a meeting such as that has a history of volatility and foreseeable violence does have a duty to at least adjourn the meeting prior to the commencement of the violence or at the commencement. When the motions ran hot, I think he had an obligation, and I think we find that in similar cases. For example, premise owners who have a fight breakout at a bar or fast food restaurant have duties to quell that violence or to throw those disruptive patrons out. I think that the president of a homeowners association has a similar duty. Apparently, in this case, he had chosen his nephew to provide the security for the meeting. So we believe he did, and that we think that was negligent. So
I guess we ought to be thankful we have judicial immunity, because if you turn around and knock Mr. Worley on the floor, would be liable under your theory if we did not have judicial immunity.
I think just hypothetically, if Mr. Worley had a history of violence and disruptive behavior in this court and it began to escalate today, then I think the court might have some duties to follow.
I think we'd blame it on our bailiff, Ken, for letting him in.
Finally, with respect to the damages, there's an argument that the medical expenses that the jury found were not properly established by a predicate of expert testimony, that they were reasonable and necessary in connection. The billings were okay, but as far as the causation, we disagree with that, because one of the exhibits says that Mr. Gavril's injuries were the result of assaultive conduct. You'll hear that from Mr. Worley, that that's not adequate to establish that. We believe that it is at least some evidence of that from which the jury could have reasonably determined that the $40,000 in medical expenses were related. But if this court determines that it was not, then that's $40,000, but the rest of the jury's damages are not under attack. So,
I had a question about that because it looked to me like the JNOV just challenged the link between all of the damages and causation, and it and there's no issue before us or any cross point before us on or a separate notice of appeal on the legal sufficiency of the evidence concerning the past medical expenses.
I understand your question, but our position is that the legal challenge to the medical link up, there's no dispute, I don't think, that Mr. Gavril suffered some injuries and testified with respect to how that had affected him.
Well, exactly, and that's my point, is that the jury found not only medical expenses, but I believe pain and suffering in the past. And
also some impairment.
Right.
Yes.
And so my question is, it looks like the JNOV challenged the causation link between all of the damages.
And the JNOV may have.
Right, right. And so my point is that the JNOV then really is a causation JNOV, because if there's nobody saying there's not evidence of, I mean, Mr. Gavril testified, so no one's saying that there's no evidence of past pain and suffering or past physical impairment.
And I think the distinction, at least that I'm drawing, is courts have always allowed plaintiffs to testify with respect to their own pain, suffering, impairment, inability to do things now that
right.
they did in the past. Where courts have required a little bit more is in connection with medical expenses, because plaintiffs aren't doctors typically. And so there's two issues. Were the medical expenses reasonable and necessary? That's established in this case
right.
by affidavit.
But what I'm saying is that issue really even before us? Because it looks like the challenge is to the granting of the JNOV.
Yes.
The point we have before us is, did the trial court properly grant the JNOV? And the JNOV challenged causation. And so what I'm saying is, are the individual elements of damages even before us? What I'm thinking is that if the JNOV was wrong, that's it. Or if it was right, that's it. We don't even address the sufficiency of the evidence as to the medical expenses, because there's really not an issue
raised
challenging
for the
court. That. Right.
Well, so I guess then what I would respond to that is we believe that there was some evidence to support all the various damages. But if Mr. Worley's clients are right that there was no evidence of one piece of damage, in other words, Mr. Gavril testified what pain and suffering this incident caused to him, how he felt afterwards, his sleeplessness, he testified to all those things. But if there's one small measure of damage that was not properly established, that's the medical expenses, then the JNOV was not proper. What would have been proper, but what you're saying is not before this court, would be to say that those damages were excessive and to seek the trial court to eliminate just that element of damage. If the trial court granted a JNOV because he didn't think that the medical expenses were properly supported, then the trial court made an error, and that's our position. So to sum up, if this court determines that the summary judgment was improperly granted, then we would request that the court remand the whole case to trial. If you decide that the summary judgment was properly granted, then we ask the court to look at the JNOV issue and determine whether or not this court should render the judgment that the trial court should have rendered by granting judgment in favor of Carl Gavril based on the jury verdict.
Don't we have to look at both issues, though, anyway?
If the court determines...
Because the summary judgment was only as to Mark Lieberman, the only party that's left, correct?
I don't think... That the court can properly disregard or reverse the JNOV, enter judgment on behalf of Carl Gavril against Mr. Onzo, and remand for trial the claims against Mr. Lieberman.
Why not?
Because I think then the jury is going to be, a new jury is going to have to determine damage and determine a percentage of responsibility, Mr. Lieberman. I'll look at that. Obviously, that would be a result that we would like, but I'm not sure that that's proper.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Cobbs. Mr. Worley?
Thank you, sir. A long time, ladies and gentlemen. On the summary judgment issue, I don't believe there's two things. The only summary judgment evidence is that Mark Lieberman pushed him down and caused post-traumatic syndrome, as testified to by Carl Gavril in his affidavit or deposition. Carl Gavril is not a doctor. He's a contractor. You know, I've been in the Marine Corps. I've been shot at, grenaded, mortared, and wounded twice, and I don't know what post-traumatic stress syndrome is, and I don't think he does either. His testimony is conclusion. The Texas case law is clear that conclusion and his belief of what it is not summary judgment evidence. I think in this case, in both cases, what we have is there's no evidence of, one, a negligent act, that, two, produced injury. In the summary judgment matter, there's no evidence that Mark Lieberman acted negligently. They claim he pushed him down. And there's no evidence that's an intentional act. They lose there. And if you say, okay, the push is a negligent act, there's no evidence that caused, in the summary judgment motion, any damages. So they lose on the summary judgment motion because they can't prove any negligent act that caused injuries, period. They don't have that in summary judgment. If we go to the case with Mr. Alonzo, we're in the same boat. It's a little bit different, although I filed it as a motion to disregard a verdict because that's where I was. But this court and the Tyler court in the former decision says you look at all the evidence and the record to determine, and if it shows that it's a willful and intentional act, the plaintiff is not entitled to recover on a negligent theory and cannot even submit that issue to the jury. And so you don't look at just see if there's any evidence to support the verdict. You basically look at all the evidence. If it shows there's a willful and intentional act, you cannot get a negligent issue. And this court has said it twice. Tyler Court followed it. Tyler Court did a very good survey of all the case law in the United States. I should tell you that Hawaii is different. Okay, they don't follow everybody else. And if you look at all the case law, I mean all the facts in this case, they cannot point to you. An argument he pointed to you, tried to point to you, or some negligent and failing to not call the meeting off or something like that. That didn't cause any injuries. The cause and the approximate cause of the injuries in this case were, as Mr. Gavril testified to, George Anjo was sitting like he was sitting at the table right there and looked like a mad dog. He jumped up and ran around the table and made a dead beat at me as fast as he could go. As I was going down from where Mr. Lieberman has pushed me, Anjo hit me and knocked me to the floor. He knocked me on the floor. I felt my whole right leg go numb and so on. His testimony is he intentionally did it every time. And all the evidence in their brief points to intentional conduct. That Mr. Anjo was intentionally kicking him or intentionally hitting him. There is no right, and I objected to the submission of the issue, and they don't have a right to any negligent issue going to the jury. And even if they did, they can't show one act of injury that was approximate cause of any negligent act. The injuries are all responsible of an intentional act.
Well, wasn't the negligence having to do with the taking of his papers?
I don't know what that was. Mr. Anjo had nothing to do with that. That was Mr. Lieberman, and I can't remember the girl's name at the time, who had it. If you watch the tape, I can't believe you guys watched that tape. Mr. Anjo wasn't involved in that. So I can't remember. Mrs. Young, I think it was, had the documents, and Mr. Gavril comes up and grabs him, and then Mr. Lieberman grabs him from him, and then he falls down, what the tape shows. Doesn't show anybody pushing, but that's neither here nor there. I go on their evidence. That's fine. I didn't call a witness in this case because I rested on what the law was in this jurisdiction and across the state of Texas and across the United States. Every testimony, everybody they put on testified of intentional altercation, an intentional assault, an intentional beating of this man, and I just let them testify because that's where they wanted to be. That's where they're going to get. And they don't have a right to a negligent submission to the jury. They didn't prove any injuries as a result of a negligent act. The only injuries they proved in this case, Mr. Gavel says he hurt his back. He testified he's hurt his back. I provided several cases of Supreme Court cases and other cases showing that in back injuries, you've got to have an expert testify about proximate cause. Mr. Gavril was a totally disabled, 100% disabled individual as a result of a back injury prior to this incident. He had back injuries. So after this incident, you have to look at the medical testimony. The earliest medical testimony we have is 18 months later in 2007. And in that testimony, a history taken. He says he's got a history of assault. There's no testimony whatsoever that's a reasonable medical probability. They have no testimony that he suffered any back injuries as a result of the altercation. Negligence. There's no evidence of any negligence and no evidence of the negligence caused any injuries.
What about the theory that presiding over the meeting, Ms. Ronzo's being in charge of the meeting, that he was responsible for making sure that nothing happened?
There's no evidence introduced at trial that he had a reason to believe that something was going to happen. There's no foreseeability. And I think that case has been talked about by the Supreme Court several times.
I'll tell you what's troublesome is that it appears that if you're sued for negligence, all you have to do is say, well, I wasn't negligent, man. I intended to do it. I went out there and I intended to do it, and thereby defeat someone's negligence cause of action. And it seems to me that at least some of the cases that you've cited, a couple of the ones from our court, say that when it's intentional, you can't get a negligence submission, but they're talking about when the cause of action requires an intent, like the cause of action that you're asserting is intentional infliction of emotional distress. Well, yeah, you can't get there if you only...
You allege negligence.
Exactly. And so it appears that some of the cases you cite, at least, are those types of cases where when the tort requires an intentional intent, you can't get there just by negligence. But on the culpability continuum, you know, from negligence through intentional knowing, you know, and gross negligence is between negligence and intentional, well, knowing intentional, and somewhere in there is wanton and willful. But on the culpability continuum, it seems like when you prove the greater, the lesser is subsumed within it.
Well, and quite frankly, if you look at a pattern jury charge, obviously an intentional act falls into the definition of negligence. It's practice beyond what a reasonable person would do and that kind of thing. But what you have is, I didn't say I had intentionally did anything. I didn't take a position whatsoever. This is their case. This is their evidence. And in the real world, downstairs, if somebody said, sued me for negligence, and I'd write back in my response to disclosure, said, no, I intended to do that, then the plaintiff's lawyer is going to have alternative pleadings and plead negligence and our intent, and we're going to try both questions, and we're going to see what the jury comes back on. Right?
Right.
We're going to have those answers to those questions. If the jury would have come back in this case and had a question on intent and said, no, there wasn't any intentional conduct here, it was all negligent, we would have those questions decided. But they didn't. The plaintiff chose to solely go upon a negligence issue when all the evidence shows intentional conduct caused these injuries. I mean, the nephew is alleged, who's not even sued, is alleged to have jumped down on his knee and broke his neck. Although we have no evidence of a broken neck anywhere. I mean, that's Mr. Gavril's testimony. So that's an intentional act. All the evidence is all the injuries were caused by intentional act. No evidence of any negligent act being caused any injuries by Mr. Anzo or Mr. Lieberman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Worley.
I felt like I was in 101 tort class, first year of torts. I go, my goodness.
Just have a few comments, and I'll be very brief. With respect to the summary judgment evidence and the argument today that Mr. Gavril's affidavit or deposition testimony and opinions were conclusory, that Those opinions that were attached to summary judgment response were not objected to. That evidence wasn't objected to in connection with its use at the summary judgment hearing based on conclusory. Mr. Worley indicated that the trial judge should have looked at all the evidence in determining whether or not judgment NOV was appropriate or not. We disagree with that. We believe that the judge has to look at the evidence that supports the verdict and in the light most favorable to it. I would point out that as Mr. Worley indicated, but just so the court's clear, Mr. Onzo did not testify at trial. He did not testify whether he acted intentionally or not. Mr. Gavril testified that he believes that George came after him with intent, but even Mr. Gavril's testimony in that regard is not conclusory. It's not binding on the trial court. It was up to the jury to decide whether he acted negligently in his conduct at the meeting or not, and they made that decision based on all of the evidence that they heard. So we will re-urge that the summary judgment ruling was erroneous and should be reversed, and that the judgment against Mr. Onzo should be reinstated. Thank you.
Mr. Coase, Mr. Worley, thank you both for appearing here this morning to present your arguments. The case is submitted, and you're both excused.